screen today, Tuesday the 9th of November. On the Ministry of Health website, there is 128 positive cases. Interestingly enough, though, that on the Ministry of Health press release, there's 125. And on the Ministry of Health website press release, 79 cases currently in hospital, whereas on the website, there's currently 65 cases in hospital. I'm just wondering whether our next kaikōrero can help us with those numbers. They're high, whichever one they are, but there's a little bit of discrepancy in those. Me tuku mihi ki a koe kere. Thank you so very much for joining us again at Rangi Wāte. Most appreciate very much your time and kōrero. Tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe.
I'm just wondering, Kere, why it is that we have got a little bit of a discrepancy in the numbers.
I'm not certain, because as you were calling out those numbers, I actually thought that there were 81 in hospital and 7 in ICU, which either way you play that, that's an incredible amount of resource that's required to support those. But in terms of the discrepancies, I'm not sure why there would be such a difference.
It might just be a matter of hours. I mean, because that could be the case as well too, couldn't it? Because positive cases are coming in every hour, and I guess it's just a matter of which one is coming up first. The press release, I think, is a little bit more up to date because it comes out just before 1 o'clock. The website, of course, is just...
What we were hearing earlier is that 9 o'clock information was being fed into the ministry, and shortly thereafter those numbers would be confirmed. But they do seem to vary from what happens after 9 o'clock and what you hear in the afternoon. So it's
should we be concerned about that though? I mean, I only just noticed it. I mean, I've been relying on the press releases that come out to the media. But should we be concerned that for the general public who aren't privy to those press releases from the ministry, they do differ from the website?
That's right. I think just as you mentioned earlier, sometimes there is a lag in the information that's required. In terms of the discrepancy, the 79 and 65 certainly quite a number out, but usually I think the numbers have been tracking relatively around the same area. But I think ultimately the issue is that this is very sick patients that are putting strain on the healthcare system.
Absolutely, and this is where I want to pick up on our kōrero, is around the pressure that is on our frontline staff, particularly our nursing staff, and also to realising that there is a lot of nursing staff out and about in the community, frontline, working with our hauora Māori as well, to trying to vaccinate and test our whānau. It's extraordinary pressure. We actually haven't heard from them at all about how they're, you know, obvious, they're not going to complain, you know, so, but nor are we hearing how the situation is for them, whether or not there is enough, if there is enough support for them. And I don't know what that means, what that kind of support looks like. What does it look like?
I think one of the reasons why we haven't heard much from the nurses, it's one of those situations where it is what it is. And for nurses, it's service before self. So we go to work, get on and do the job, because patients are forefront to the care that we provide. There are nurses, so as we mentioned a year plus ago, the issues still remain. They haven't been remedied. There isn't a magic wand that has suddenly created all this extra nursing staff. There isn't that relief to be able to provide for the nurses. So as they do all the time, they suck it up and dig it in. And so the pressures are still very real. And then on top of that, we hear where our hospital down further down in the North Island is wanting to charge exorbitant costs for nurses to park their cars within the hospital facilities. So things like that certainly are offensive to nurses that are going there to work and realise that the pressures that they're under. And then something relatively small in the eyes of the people that are making those changes can absolutely upset the apple cart for the nurses and become the last straw. But in terms of supply of PPE gear, there's still those pressures from time to time, still shortages of nurses. But we realise that we've got some critically sick people too. And so it is service before self.
And so going back to that, you know, what support can be given to them, it's stuff like free car parks, isn't it? So that they can come and go when they are rostered on, unimpeded by having to put even $1 in the slot, let alone whatever it is that that hospital is charging them. It is about giving them the right equipment in a timely fashion so that they can carry out their duties without having to worry about their own personal safety. You know, safety first, you know, self, you know, others before self. It's just those really small things that we might take for granted, actually, that would help assist our nurses.
That's right, because I don't think we really appreciate that after a long shift on a night shift where you have to walk miles to get to your car, the risk that that creates. You're often the only nurse walking to your car that's parked miles away because that's part of the way where you had to park it because of car parking wasn't available when you arrived to work. Those small things do make an incredible difference to the life of a nurse. And I think that, you know, I mean, we'd like to say we've got to have more nurses. We've got to have a better recognition of the profession. We've got to have safety at work. And that's really key to those small things that can make a huge difference.
When will we be getting to the tipping point in terms of numbers coming into the hospitals before those numbers really do outweigh the number of nurses that are able to assist?
I would say that we're almost at that tipping point now. I mean, we've seen an increase in patients being tested and becoming COVID positive. Some of them are being dealt with in the community. Some of them are being dealt with in the hospital. We've already had critical crisis points already within the nursing workforce, and they are just making do. The question is, how long can they go on like this? And I think that that's a really critical thing. What we must see is that the management or the CEO and their executive teams of those DHBs do look at safe staffing and what that looks like, do realise that we've got a staff that has been operating at this level for so long that exhaustion points come earlier than if we had a workforce that wasn't in this critical and fatigued state.
And of course, the numbers that we were talking about, 75, 68, those are the COVID-19 positive cases. And of course, the rest of the numbers are made up of other issues that are being presented by patients coming into the hospital. And then, of course, there are some patients who are unable to get into the hospital because there are just no beds available. So we're not just talking about 78 or 65 or 78 people in Auckland. Yes, they are the positive cases majority in Auckland, but they just make up a small tipping point of those other of all patients that are currently in the hospital.
You're so right, because 2 years ago, the business as usual was dealing with diabetes, congestive heart failure, cancer patients, all of those things, all those non-communicable diseases that were having negative impact on our health. They still haven't gone away. But what's shifted is that our attentions come to COVID and how we manage COVID. But the problem is we have to turn our eyes to both, because these are still killing our people. And COVID is something real that we're facing at the moment. It's that unknown that we don't know how to prepare for. But both are really critical to get on top of. And, of course, for Māori and Pacifica, that have these comorbidities, it's going to be huge when we start to see the impact of COVID on our people that have got these types of non-communicable diseases.
And of course, with COVID-19, of course, it is infectious. And we have seen other patients who have subsequently been tested, you know, have contracted COVID-19 because of, you know, open doors or whatever, however it is. Those are the additional burdens that are placed upon our nursing staff and our frontline staff, is having to manage the infection or the infectiousness of COVID-19 while trying to keep all patients safe.
Yeah, that's right. Over the last almost month or so, we've been on international conferences. And the really important thing about this is that we learn from others the potential impact and harm that COVID-19 can have, because we haven't really seen the numbers of infections. We haven't seen the amount of sick people to the degrees that they have internationally. We've got to learn and take advice and direction from them. A niece of mine said that she's come over from France to support your father, so here for a different reason. But she said the track that New Zealand is on is far better, because while it may look like this is out of control, the fact that we're taking a more cautious approach in dealing with these and communicating vaccination is the key if we want to get on top of this. She said that's far better messaging than what we've had. We've seen people die. And she said, until you've seen and held the hand of a 16-year-old that passed away because there was nothing that you could do, will you truly understand the significance of the progress we're making? As difficult as that may sound for some, that's the reality that some of our nurses will have to face in the future if we don't manage things and get on top of things. But we've got to be mindful that the non-communicable diseases, the diabetes, the cancers, still exist, and we can't forget them.
In addition to that, while we are focused on, and quite rightly so, COVID, immunisation for our tamariki is sort of in the background as well. These are the usual immunisations for chickenpox, measles, all those other things that the kiddies would have had at school, you know, during their school term. But, you know, they've been put on the back burner because kiddies aren't at school to get the reminder or whatever, or, you know, it's just not happening for us while we're busy looking somewhere else. Is that also having any kind of impact on the pressures and challenges being faced by our nurses?
I think eventually it will, as we've seen the rollout has had impacts at different levels. The important thing around immunisations when it comes to younger children is that we've got to make sure that we don't fail how we failed in the rollout. We've got to make sure that the messaging is appropriate for Māori, Pacifica, for whomever, and really make that clear about the impact. I've heard already that many adults don't mind vaccinating themselves, but when it comes to making the decision or the choice for your children, it's quite a different story, and some are really hesitant. So we have to make sure that whatever strategies we put in place, it does have a fully informed process. It does have focus groups or talk on the marae and have that led by people that are experts in that field, but also don't be afraid to listen to the counter argument, because it's only then can we dispel some of the myths that are out there.
And finally, the majority of the cases in hospital in Tamaki Makaurau, they are Māori, and our Māori whānau and Pacifica. Is that creating a different type of pressure and challenge for our frontline nursing staff?
I think that it has to, because what we've always been saying as Aorunanga is we've got to make sure that services are culturally appropriate. And as the Y2575 indicated, that not all the services are culturally capable to respond to our people. And this is a critical time where it's important that as whānau, we're connected, and part of our well-being, part of helping us through, is making sure that we've got whānau connection. Now, COVID doesn't allow us to do that. So we've got to make sure that we deal with it in a way that's culturally appropriate, given their very unusual circumstances that we're in at the moment. So it does create additional pressures, but we've got to step up as a health system and deal with it.
Thank you so very much for joining us this afternoon on Itirangi Wāte. I appreciate all your kōrero and your support. Just one other question, and it is about our frontline nursing staff out and about in the community with our hauora Māori. Now, we've got quite a significant number travelling with Waipareira Trust, that's from Auckland up north, to assist with our hauora in Te Tai Tukero. Who's paying for that?
I'm not completely sure, but it should be the Ministry of Health that fund primary healthcare services adequately. Given that there is a need in there, it should be something that's negotiated with the Ministry of Health to have a suitably adequate and culturally appropriate workforce to deal with this demand.
And I guess the reason why I'm asking this is because we've seen the DHB renege again on the data for Māori, albeit to Waipareira Trust and Whānau Ora. So we're not 100% sure, confident that we can trust the ministry, the DHBs, the ministry, or whoever it is, to pay for our frontline nurses to go and assist our whānau in rural areas. We're just not confident.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's the important thing. I mean, even for the nurses within the district health boards, part of the delay in getting the last MECA across the line and signed off or voted in was because of the trust issue with DHBs. And you would say that the same thing may well apply. We'd heard that some of the earlier fundings for Māori and iwi providers had been very slow in coming. It's not acceptable, especially in these exceptional times, for that any delay to happen and any inequities between nurses on the front line in the community and nurses on the front line in district health boards. It all should be paid the same.
Thank you so very much for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate your kōrero. Me tuku mihi ki a koe. Tēnā koe.